What's all this talk about politics lately? Like there's some sort of election going on. That's right, this week it's all political, people. I'm Barrett Goldingham, hearing voices from NPR, the best of public radio, supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. We'll hit the campaign trail soon with some Montana candidates, but first, a few college students from Chicago. In 2004, producer Jonathan Menjivar asked them, what do politicians do?
I'm really political minded. Like, I don't think I'm a poli sci major, but I don't really want to be a politician because I don't like politicians. I like to criticize them.
Politicians, I don't like them.
Corrupt.
Greedy.
Deceitful.
Selfish.
Make promises, don't keep them.
No, just superficial people.
Politicians are all morons.
Do I trust politicians?
Democrat, Republican. I don't really trust any of them.
What do I think politicians do?
What do they do?
Sit on their butt in their office and try to promote their selves.
I think politicians sit around and really talk about laws and legislation.
It's hard to say what they're actually going to do once they get into office.
They are supposed to represent us, carry out our will. Whether that happens or not, that's another story.
It's a lot of stuff not getting done that needs to be done. Or people not being taken care of that need to be taken care of. Or things being cut that shouldn't be cut.
It's impossible to get anything done if you have to listen to everybody. To some extent, politicians have to lie. So I think what they do is they try to come up with the most prudent, most reasonable policy line. But then on the other side, they have to find a way to sell it to the country.
And it's probably a good thing that there are people who are willing to devote their time to doing that, but I personally wouldn't.
Hello. I'm Emily Swanson. I'm one of your local politicians, and I'm out campaigning. Hello.
Yes.
I'm Emily Swanson. I'm one of your local politicians.
Yeah.
And I'm out campaigning.
Well, good for you.
Hi, is anyone home? Where are your people? Hello. Hi, I'm Emily Swanson. I'm one of your local politicians out campaigning. But I'm just out, wanted to introduce myself and ask for your vote.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
This time of year, I'm listening and I'm reading everything I can get a hold of.
Good.
As I said, I hate to think I go to the polls again.
I don't think voters are unintelligent. I just think they're busy.
So what you end up doing is trying to fit your opinions and your ideas into a teeny fraction of time that people might be able to pay attention to. So it ends up being that 10-second soundbite. Hello, I'm Emily Swanson. I'm one of your local politicians.
This is where the rubber meets the road, right here. You know, this is it. This is really what democracy, what representative democracy is all about. Is going to the individual voter and asking them to trust you with their vote.
Okay. Thanks.
I don't have a huge agenda. You know, I don't have the answers. I don't have things that I think, you know, our society is just going down the tubes because of this or that. I just like people, and I like trying to figure out the problems that we're facing and put my best effort into being thoughtful, thinking of other people's viewpoints, and deciding on what the common ground is.
Well, open the door.
Hello.
Someone? Hello.
I'm Emily Swanson, one of your local politicians.
Yes, Emily.
And I'm out campaigning.
Well, thank you for stopping.
Yes, I just wanted to introduce myself and ask you for your vote.
Thank you very much.
You've got a beautiful day to do it.
It's gorgeous. I know. It's a treat to be out.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. That's very special. Thank you.
Thanks.
You are hearing voices from NPR. That was State Senator Emily Swanson of Montana, where I live. We have a big sky here, but a small population. So we're closer to how the country was when the founding fathers created this representative democracy. But our state doesn't get much representation. For about 1 million people, Montana has just one representative in the U.S. House. We used to have two, but after the 1990 census, they took one away. So back then, I followed our two incumbents for a year on the campaign trail. I called the story Jefferson's Ghost. Here's NPR host Lynn Neary introducing it in 1992 on All Things Considered.
Because of the new census figures showing that population growth in Montana did not keep pace with other parts of the country, the state is due to lose one of its two congressional seats this year. That means Montana's longtime incumbents Liberal Democrat Pat Williams and conservative Republican Ron Marlinet will face each other this fall for the state's lone congressional seat. Montana has gone to the Supreme Court to challenge the reapportionment, but Marlinet and Williams aren't waiting around for the court to decide. For the past several months, they've been crisscrossing the state, campaigning against each other. Montana producer Barrett Golding is following both candidates, but what he's looking for transcends partisan politics.
Way out west in Big Montana, we're a fine old piece of Americana. We got cowboys and Indians and wilderness out the wazoo. We got buffalo, we got movie stars, we got grizzly bears and Japanese cars. And the last time I counted our congressmen, there were two. We're just a bunch of small town hicks stuck out here in the sticks. Hey, as long as we got our guns, could be we just need one.
There's something strange going on out here. People are talking about
Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson.
Thomas Jefferson thought that Americans, I believe, were going to be more involved in the basis of their government and more involved in insisting on reforms. And we're going to be probably more vigilant than we have been in assuring that those among us who would be king, those among us who would take power to themselves, were denied that power.
That's our Democratic Congressman, Pat Williams.
I was born in Montana's capital city of Helena. I grew up in Montana's mining city of Butte, and have, since I can remember, been enamored with this system, which proposes that a free people, left to their own devices, can rule themselves and do it better than the wisest king or queen that ever ruled. That's always been a thrilling notion to me, and I have always wanted to be part of that experiment.
How are you?
Fine, Pat.
It's nice to see you.
Hi, Pat.
How you doing?
Good.
All right. Where'd you get that coffee?
It's Sunday afternoon, Whitehall, Montana.
Thank you all for...
In the last year, Pat's traveled over 10,000 miles within the state. He's been to 55 communities. He's had over 600 meetings.
And that's Joe Lamson. He's Pat's campaign manager.
If you're running for Congress, say, in the Los Angeles area, you're not out there knocking on doors. It's virtually all done through the media and fundraising, whereas here it's basically pretty simple. You just go out there and talk to folks, and I think it's much more what Jefferson and folks had in mind in terms of how they thought representative government ought to work.
I like to say that politically, Montana is what America started out to be. I think we're what the founders envisioned politics would be. You call me Pat, you call him Ron, and first names. And we show up in the barbershops and homes like this, and you can call our office, and we'll call you back if you want. It still works that way in Montana. Maybe it's because there's less than a million of us.
We got a Democrat that comes from Butte. He's a working man's hero and a liberal to boot. We got a Republican cowboy from the Indian part of the state. We got some flat broke farmers and summer cottage snobs, some big corporations and some low paying jobs, but there ain't enough voters to keep both guys on the slate. We're just a bunch of small town hicks stuck out here in the sticks. Hey, one might be too many, could be we don't need any.
When I walked into Woody Kipp's office at the Native American Studies Building, University of Montana, a copy of Alexis de Tocqueville's Democracy in America was sitting on his desk. He said he'd just got it at a used bookstore. He'd been reading it that morning. I asked him, why?
Because I have to communicate with the American people through their language. They do not speak Blackfeet. They do not speak any native language. So I read their books and try to make sense of it. They beat us over the head with their Bibles, convincing us that they were some kind of religious people. When they came, they sent the missionaries, and right after the missionaries came the military. And so now, when we have come to a point where we are becoming literate and have read the Bible and can read the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, we realize that the system that we lived under, even though it was oral and unwritten, was much closer to a sense of freedom and democracy than we live under today. Today we see that the American people live in a spiritual vacuum. There has been a failure of the Christian teaching somewhere. It has been perverted to where we feel fear in our hearts when we hear them talk about God. Because when they say God, that means that you can do anything you want, including commit genocide and say this is God's will and call it manifest destiny.
Limiting career, going back into the early 30s, Montana. Contact with Western ideas like freedom, democracy, and human rights.
Skin? Yeah.
Woody Kipp told me he left his reservation to become a Marine. He served in Santo Domingo and in Vietnam. When he came home, he joined the American Indian Movement. He was there at Wounded Knee. He said he saw the same guns he'd used to defend the United States now pointing at him. And he wondered, what kind of a country is this? I've been wondering that too. Driving around at night following these candidates, I've been thinking about Thomas Jefferson. The Indian, he wrote, is in mind and body equal to the white man. Our lack of attention to their rights is a principal source of dishonor to the American character. Then again, other times he'd say things like, they are a useless, expensive, and ungovernable ally. He wrote, I would never cease pursuing them while one Indian remained on this side of the Mississippi. I guess he couldn't decide what kind of country this is either. I've just been at a town meeting in Libby with our Republican Congressman, Ron Marlinet, and a hall full of loggers and ranchers. The chosen people of God, that's what Jefferson said. Those who labor in the earth are the most vigorous, the most independent, the most virtuous. He just went on and on.
People in the rural areas are very astute. They're very aware. I may drive up to a very remote ranch and they're ready, willing, and able, quite able, to talk to me about events that are taking place in Berlin, events that are taking place in Romania, and they want to meet you on a personal basis. They want to know your personality and what kind of a guy you are. And that's the beauty of small communities, and that's what Montana is. I enjoy campaigning. I enjoy being out here and talking to people. It's easier than the job I do in Washington.
Jefferson would have agreed. The mobs of great cities, he wrote, add just so much to the support of pure government as sores do to the strength of the human body. Well, there aren't any great cities or chosen people out here tonight. Just the deer, who keep running right out in front of my car. They stop and stare at the headlights like they're eternally amazed at the encroachment of man.
I took careful aim, got the sucker right exactly in the middle, and bagged a deer in the front of my Wagoneer last night. Unfortunately, poor thing.
Yeah, our congressman hit one of those deer. But by the next morning, we've got another vehicle, and we're back on the campaign trail. At the Hungry Horse newspaper, we discuss the day's vital issues.
I want to hear about the deer.
We watch them make plywood at Plum Creek Timber Company. And at a high-tech manufacturing plant, I'm still not sure what they were making.
So the robot picks wafers from the cassette, sends it into this laser instrument here, and he's measuring particles. And there's so many on there that it's taking him a long time.
The bottom line is, what's the state doing?
Later, okay. We meet with the company execs.
There's a lot of room for improvement.
I could be easily anti anybody that's in office, the governor, the congressman, or whoever.
We've got one more appointment 2 hours south. It's late afternoon, almost dark. And I'm still asking the same old question.
How democracy is doing, how the republic is doing, that depends on the people. The general population pays attention, looks at the voting records, gets involved, decides we're going to do something about this. They do. And democracy changes a direction.
That night, there's a town meeting on the Flathead Indian Reservation.
Farmer, rancher, businessman, outdoorsman.
The speeches and responses of all politicians,
rights,
after a while, they get
very
kind
conservative,
of predictable.
My home is Montana.
My home and my,
my
heart
family
are in
all
Montana.
Lives.
My business and my ranch
and I have
are
three
in
grandchildren.
Montana. Because I live here and have not become a tool and part of the fabric of the Washington establishment.
But the voters that show up for these things,
keep them from taking over.
You never know what they're going to say.
You know, it's kind of rough. They got so much bureaus everywhere that you're honest that you can't even go take a leak in your backyard without getting into trouble. Our country's supposed to be a republic run by the people. Now everything must be run from Washington, D.C. Why don't they stay home and let her run her own country?
That's Dodie Smith.
Semi-retired broke farmer.
He wants to talk to his congressman.
I got a question since you brought this up. Why does administration keep asking for more money all the time and our kids have to start paying more to keep the administration going? Now that's just one. I got a whole bunch of them I'd like to ask you while I got the chance.
He did. He had plenty on his mind.
This water situation is something terrible.
And so did lots of others.
And then the next thing to go are facilities like this.
Those business executives.
We're talking about highly educated, highly specialized, dedicated professionals on the streets today.
And the loggers.
We're unemployed. We want at that timber. And the ranger down there and some of these yokels that work for the Forest Service are up here. These guys are standing in between us. We want that timber. We want to work. We don't want on the dole.
A little rebellion now and then is a good thing.
We don't want
Jefferson
it.
Wrote that to James Madison. Let them take arms, he said. The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants.
Before long, the working man's going to be paying 100% of his wages for taxes. What's he working for?
We have much more machinery of government than is necessary. Too many parasites living on the labors of the industrious. Jefferson, 1824.
Yes.
Yeah, that is a question.
And when, where will it end? Where will it end? It goes on and on and on.
I think we're far afield.
Ron Marlaney.
We've gone astray, and that's why you see so much resentment on the part of the general public. They see the government as having become removed, ineffective, an erosion of their personal freedoms, an erosion of their income base through taxation. They see this happening. They don't quite know what to do, and so they say, well, let's limit the terms of these guys. Let's get them out of there. Throw the bums out.
Yeah, chuck out all the laws, too, even the Constitution. That's what Jefferson wanted. Every 20 years or so, start over. Figure the whole thing out again. If once the people become inattentive to the public affairs, then Congress and judges and governors shall all become wolves. He wrote that in 1787, the year the Constitution was being drafted. Is it still true? That's what I want to find out.
Jefferson gave Lewis and Clark the nod. He believed that the farmer was next to God, and the top of the Missouri was a little piece of heaven to plow. As an educated yeoman in the countryside was more righteous than relations who were citified. Hell, Thomas would be rolling in his grave to see his yeoman now. We're just a bunch of small town hicks stuck out here in the sticks. Hey, it's political abortion. Let's get reapportioned.
The American dream is...
What do you mean? Like white picket,
fences, two-story houses
house
in the
with
suburbs.
White picket fence. The American dream, you mean to own a house in the suburbs? I have three kids and a dog.
Good neighborhood. The dog.
Like that kind of American dream?
But, I mean, for me, it's different. It's getting to do what I want and what I love.
You know, I don't want to become just a commodity.
To have a nice car, a beautiful wife.
How big does your house have to be? How many cars do you have to have?
It's like a pagan god.
40 acres and a mule.
You rip God out of society and you fill it with these material items. And, you know, I don't want to live that dream.
That's the American dream to me. Now, you tell me, what's the American dream to you?
it's not just one American dream. It's going to be many, and it's going to take a while to get to so-called American dream if there is one. So, I mean, it's not really there.
And I would say that I very much believe in it because, you know, I grew up in a poor family in West Virginia, and you know, I've had the mobility to do things in my life that in a lot of other countries I would never have the opportunity to do.
Well, I think it's a goal that is not really just American, but is pretty worldwide.
Yeah, but that's so not true, because then they come to this country and they realize, oh, I'm stuck with a bad job that I make little money at. The American dream doesn't come true for most people.
My dream would one day maybe to be a member of Congress, maybe in the House of Representatives, or maybe even one day the Senate.
My dream, grow up, become a priest, follow God.
And I think the American dream doesn't lie in what you have or what you own, it's in who you are.
My dream? I just hope there's better days ahead.
My American dream is like Martin Luther King's American dream. One day, America would be created equal. No violence, no killing, no drugs. But you know what? That's just a dream. It ain't reality.
Thoughts of some Chicago college students, recorded by Jonathan Menjivar for the WBEZ series Chicago Matters. The instrumental music in this hour is by Jeff Arntzen of Racket Ship. Greg Keeler wrote the songs that accompany my chasing Montana congressional candidates across the state, and that chase continues in a minute on Hearing Voices.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. From NPR, this is HearingVoices.com.
You are hearing Voices from NPR. Welcome back. We rejoin our Montana incumbents crisscrossing the state. Again, from 1992, here's host Lynn Neary on NPR's All Things Considered.
Our contemporaries are constantly excited by two conflicting passions, Alexis de Tocqueville wrote of Americans in 1830. They want to be led and they wish to remain free. As they cannot destroy either the one or the other of these contrary propensities, they strive to satisfy them both at once. Producer Barrett Golding has been talking to voters in Montana, where he found that de Tocqueville's sentiments still apply. Montana is in the midst of a curious political campaign. Because of reapportionment, the state's two U.S. representatives, conservative Ron Marlaney and liberal Pat Williams, are running against each other for one congressional seat. It's brought into sharper focus just what kind of government people in Montana want.
Now,
There's only a few places to buy bucking broncs or bulls for a rodeo. People come from all over the world to this one, the annual Miles City Bucking Horse Sale.
This is the true West, eastern Montana and Wyoming.
That's Congressman Ron Marlinay. He grew up near here in Scobie, Montana. His grandfather was one of the first ranchers to settle the area.
You know, you might have the California cowboys coming into western Montana and buying a little ranchette and thinking they're in the true West. But the true West is down here. You just watch the faces of these people.
Ron climbed up on his horse and joined the marching bands, floats, steam tractors, horse carriages, and gobs of other politicians for a trek down Main Street.
Art Center Western Art Roundup Show.
Congressman Pat Williams didn't have a horse or even a cowboy hat. He blended in with the crowd at the art sale.
Yeah, Montana has and has always had a lot of writers and artists. We've always turned a lot to introspection and considering the human place under the big sky.
I think it's something about being close to the land and close to nature.
Ron Marlinay was across the fairgrounds with a gun in his hand.
Yeah, you've got to stop at a gun show. If there's a gun show, I got to stop.
Give me a little tour of the guns here, would you?
Well, here's your semi-automatic 22. It's a pistol. That's a revolver. One individual could easily own 20 or 30 firearms and have a different purpose for each one. If they ever raided my place, they would say, oh, there's another one of those crazies. He's got enough guns and ammunition to stock a store.
Later, both candidates came together for a handshake in the town park.
Now, Ron and I are about to show you that we're friends.
Hey, partner.
How are you?
Partner, do you have a passport to come over here?
Yes, the rainforests of Brazil are critical. So are the ancient forests of the Pacific Northwest.
This isn't the first time their campaign trails have crossed. They just finished their third debate. The congressman told us stories.
My first home was a tar paper shack. There was no electricity, no indoor plumbing, no running water, not even a well.
And Montana is not so much a place, a friend of mine has written, as it is a winnowing out process. Wally Stegner, the author, says the West is hope's native home.
Then they both gave us lessons in party politics.
A conservative believes in the cumulative wisdom of the people at large, and a liberal believes in the centralization of power and the overpowering wisdom and regulation of the federal government.
Ron said earlier, liberal Pat Williams is for a big centralized government. That's not true. I'm not for big centralized government. I don't want power centralized in anyone's hand, including multinational, international cartels and corporations. I don't believe in bigness like that.
I refuse to get involved in the matter of labeling in terms of conservative and liberal.
Bill Yellowtail.
Because those things mean one thing for me, but conjure an entirely different picture in your mind or in the mind of any other citizen of Montana.
Bill's a state senator from the Crow Reservation.
I'll bet you if they're talking to a small family rancher in eastern Montana, the two candidates will have very much the same hopes and the same message for that family who are struggling to remain on the land. Both will say, I am committed to seeing you stay on your family ranch.
I got the post-western blues. I got llamas in my pasture where a field of crop disasters never grew. I got the post-western blues. I got a field of Russian thistle near a silo full of missile. What the hell am I supposed to do? If you drive up to Montana, it's like one big postcard. Yes, it looks like peace and harmony out across that cattle guard. But when you pull off of the four lane to a small cafe out there, He'll find hayseeds on subsidies, cussing women on welfare.
All the lumber companies here in South Central Montana are having a hard time staying in business. This is the Greater Yellowstone area, just north of the park, between the Beartooth Wilderness and Gallatin National Forest. There's mountain lions here, grizzly bear. But timber workers say the most dangerous animal is
the spotted owl.
The spotted bird.
Did you ever know that spotted owl tastes better than chicken?
The radical environmental extremist groups. Yeah, they've been real successful.
Some locals want to do something about it, so they've come to this meeting in Livingston of the People for the West.
The members are everything from miners, ranchers, loggers, recreationists, sportsmen, whoever wants to get involved and help fight to keep public lands open to multiple use.
You know, I've written letters by the hundreds, and it's incomprehensible to me that you'd even have to write those blockheads about most of these things. That's what grapples me, and you get some asinine answer back from them. Oh, they thank you, and they sure will consider it, but for the present time, it's going to have to be this way, and I'm beginning to think it's a hopeless situation.
We've been defeated. The local people that live in the area that are dealing with these issues, have been defeated quite a bit in the past, especially in the Yellowstone region, because there are so many active preservation type groups, and they have better leadership. They have attorneys, accountants.
You can't talk to those people.
Yeah.
The environmentalists are behind this. They don't own a ranch. They don't try to run cows with wolves or grizzly bear. If they come into my yard today and kill cattle, I can't shoot them. It's against the law. Yeah.
The majority of the people in this country think their food comes from supermarkets. They don't realize that 2% of us are feeding them.
Pete Story is a rancher.
And we're doing it almost as a hobby. You know, any of us could take our money out of our ranching, put it in anything, passbook savings, and make more money than we do ranching. And sooner or later, government stupidity, taxes, regulations, other greed will make it impossible for us to ranch, and then you'll starve, and your children will starve.
Pete's from Immigrant, Montana.
We've run cattle up there since 1866. I'm the fourth generation. My grandsons are the sixth generation on our ranch.
And for 18 years, he was also a state senator.
So this is the nature of man. Human relations are cyclical. All human problems, you know, there's a 60-year cycle between Bacchanal and Puritanism. We were headed back away even before AIDS. We were headed away from the anything-goes free love of the 70s. Every institution has a purpose and a need and a growth, and as it fulfills its purpose, it gets stronger and stronger, and then it hits a point where it's too strong. And power corrupts, and absolute power absolutely corrupts. That's the old hackneyed phrase, but it's true. And bureaucracy eventually will be the next civil war, I suppose, will be between different agencies.
I got the post-Western blues. This land ain't your land, it ain't my land, 'cause we sold it to an island called Japan. I got the post-Western blues. You can have your wolf and grizzly bear and activists with frizzy hair, and what the hell am I supposed to do?
I have to watch the U.S. Forest Service, and I have to take my time to write appeals so that I can preserve some areas that legally need to be protected, that we have laws to protect these areas. But instead, I have to fight the politicians, and it's a long process.
This is a town meeting in a hall next to the Clark Fork River. The town is Missoula in western Montana. The moderator is Mayor Dan Kemis.
We in the West are very rarely called upon to work out among ourselves how we would like to see our own homeland managed.
The mayor wrote a book, Community and the Politics of Place.
We go and argue our case before the federal decision makers, to a certain extent like misbehaving children. The federal parent is always there then either to make the decision or above all to be blamed for making the wrong decision.
I have just started paying attention. I just went down to the Nevada test site. We're still bombing America. Our TVs don't report that 493 people, I was one of them, was arrested on Easter Sunday.
Democracy means we're governing ourselves, not complaining about the government. And at some point, if we're going to be serious about calling ourselves a democracy, we have to be willing to move beyond grievance and beyond protest and take on the challenge of government.
And we receive the power of speech in which we can be direct.
Missoula is the home of the state's liberal arts college.
Articulate.
And it shows.
It's what speaks to us that we speak from. And that's the power in this community of what you and I honor here.
People really talk like that in this town. And others seem to understand.
From the beginning of this country, there has been a myth that somehow all you had to do was to construct the perfectly regulated political machine, and that it would take care of our interests and our needs without really any tending at all. The slogan I have in mind is, the price of democracy is eternal vigilance. And we have told ourselves that that must mean keeping bombers in the air 24 hours a day.
I would like to address the issue of democracy. The information that I can get where I live in Montana, it's not sufficient to make educated decisions on. What I am finding out about this presidential race is not enough to elect a president.
People need to feel that they're operating within a political entity that makes sense to them, over which they actually can have some control.
When we talk about democracy, I'm thinking about Tocqueville's Democracy in America, and where he said the real power of America came from the town meeting, that the real political America, what was really happening, was not in Washington, D.C., but was happening here. I was a public teacher for many years, and I used to find it ironic that if my students turned out to be the kind of people that we studied about, they would have been expelled from school.
We can begin to devise a more flexible way of problem solving that allows river basins, for example, the people in river basins, to work out their own problems within that river basin, regardless of where the state lines cut across. We need to understand the real places that people live, whether it's the Clark Fork Valley, whether it's the Northern Rockies, whether it's the Intermountain West, or North America, or the Earth itself.
Writer William Kittredge read a closing statement.
The poet C.K. Williams came to Missoula some years ago and spoke of narrative dysfunction as a prime part of mental illness in our time. Many of us, he said, lose track of the story of ourselves, the story which tells us who we are supposed to be and how we are supposed to act. It isn't any fun, and it doesn't just happen to people, it happens to entire societies. Stories are places to live inside the imagination. We know a lot of them, and we're in a lot of trouble when we don't know which one is ours, or when the one we inhabit doesn't work anymore, and we stick with it anyway.
I've been across the whole state watching citizens and self-government in action.
Is there a message that you want me to give to the mayor? I've just got some calls waiting to...
But it was in City Hall that I got my best glimpse of real politics.
I'm Juanita Eisman, the mayor's secretary. Well, all I do is just visit with them. They want to, we have a lady that comes in, and she says that people are accusing her of... being demonic, and she says it's not true, and I want to stop. The police department won't do anything about it. So we just let the lady talk, and pretty soon she feels better and she leaves.
So a lot of people call and use politics kind of a personal thing?
I think just to visit because they get lonesome, or maybe to feel more involved, more important. When I realize that's the kind of quality is why I realize all they want to do is just tell the story that they want to tell, and then that's it.
That is it.
For a while, till the next time.
That's politics. People sometimes want to tell their story to politicians who sometimes want to listen.
Politicians, writers, and artists have a lot in common because they listen to people, and then they reflect what they hear and see and learn.
Congressman Pat Williams.
Politicians reflect it in legislation, or in speeches, or in attempting to lead people. Writers reflect it with words and artists with images. But we get it, we all get it from listening to people.
And our job then is to, we as citizens and voters, have the responsibility then to...
Bill Yellowtail.
Ask hard questions, not let them get away from answering just what it is they really mean. Otherwise, it becomes a beauty contest. Who has the most money to buy the prettiest TV ads? I worry about democracy in this country and certainly in Montana when I see the cynicism that is exhibited by voters, the apathy. Now, maybe what it takes is a high-profile, high-contrast election just like this to really stimulate voters. I hope so. This may make a difference.
There's no single simple story that will define paradise for us, and there never will be.
William Kittredge.
On summer mornings, I can walk down Higgins Avenue to the farmer's market by the old Great Northern Depot in Missoula and buy baby carrots and white daisies, zinnias, snow peas, new corn, gladiola, iris, and chard. In my simple-minded way, I love the old men selling long-stemmed roses and the hippie mothers who are becoming farm wives. I try to imagine their secrets. When I buy, I like to deal with the Hmong refugees from the highlands of Laos. I wonder if their old people are crazy with grief for lost villages. Maybe they are, or maybe they were glad to escape. On the wall above the place where I write, there's a bedspread embroidered by a Hmong woman, imaginary animals on a field of tropical green, a royal red elephant with black ears, a turtle with blue and yellow and red checkered shell, and a green prehistoric creature with white horns. It's the work of a woman transported a long way from her homeland who stayed tough enough to dream up another story, and it gives me heart. Thank you.
Tried to read some writing by this guy named Derrida about how things deconstruct themselves and don't go by no law. Well, I don't know my Derrida from my derriere, but if a rattlesnake don't rattle, you'll never know it's there. I got the post-western blue. Clear blue skies don't turn dark blue like skies in good old John Wayne movies used to do. I got the post-western blues. Hell, I never did discover how to deal with federal government, so what the hell am I supposed to do?
Singer Greg Keeley.
No, I never did discover how to deal with federal government, so what the hell am I supposed to do?
Democrat Pat Williams won the election and served until 1997, 9 terms in all. He's now a senior fellow at the Center for the Rocky Mountain West. Republican Ron Marlaney served 6 terms in the U.S. House. He's since worked for farmers and hunters organizations. You are hearing voices from NPR. Almost half the eligible voters in this country don't bother to vote. But some people are passionate about politics. They pass out pamphlets, work the phones, write letters to the editor. I've often wondered why, when so many people couldn't care less about politics, these people care so much. So I went down to party headquarters and asked them.
Well, I'm a political junkie. I just love that stuff. And it doesn't matter to me whether it's demonstrating in the streets or working for a candidate. I like politics in all of its forms. And I, frankly, I can't understand why everybody isn't interested in it. Because to me, it's just, I mean, it's just life. I think people, I mean, it's how people get along. That's politics. Much better than watching football on TV, you know. No, you can be involved. I mean, you can act.
Political people on the late night talk shows are writing letters for the editorial page. The opposition's arguments are always a crock, so you're always flying into a rage.
We're real interested in the free enterprise system. You know, we believe in working for a living.
We just cannot simply, we don't have the resources to do all the things that we have by law committed that we will do for the American people.
And I guess I've always felt that, you know, the underdog was deserved all the help he could get.
I believe that the less government is the best government.
When government starts affecting your life, when you have to fight to be able to do business, it gets you involved in the process.
You write your congressman a letter when you feel dejected. You write a little letter to your senator too. You say if they don't cheer you up, they won't get re-elected by political people like you.
I'm co-chairman of this county Democratic Party, but I don't look at party platforms. You know, they're mostly baloney and shoot, you know, American political parties. What are they? What's the difference? I don't know.
We're all Republicans.
We're all Republicans here, I said, and probably will be and probably die and be a Republican still. When we die, we're a Republican the rest of our life. My kids are both Republicans. Thank God for that. We thank the Lord that he made us Republicans.
Yeah, you bet. I'm a libertarian anarchist. I have no political allegiance. Mainly, I think it's because I tend to be too rational. The world penalizes those who think logically, and there's nothing really logical about politics.
If it's essential to me, it's my American right. If it's essential to you, it's just political pork. If we're in agreement, you're seeing the light. But if we disagree, you're a dork.
I've got a sign that says, immigration, white or wrong. You know, the white people are being overtaxed and overworked, and I don't like all these illegal aliens coming in here. I mean, they've got preference over the rest of us. They get welfare and...
I am perfectly willing to die for your right to believe that which you believe. But I will fight you to the death and see you in hell before I will allow you to impose your beliefs on me and mine. That's one of the essential elements of liberty, and most Americans have no grasp of that concept.
We hear all the time that the poor people, the people who don't have medical insurance, the people who don't have enough to eat, the people who don't have decent housing, they don't vote. Why? Well, I think that's one thing I think I did learn an answer to. When I went around trailer courts, some of the poor trailer courts where the rents are low and the trailers are small and old and drafty and not very good. And you knock on a door, maybe say 6 o'clock at night, and somebody comes to the door, looks very tired. Somebody's sick, there's a baby crying. Maybe they tell you they just lost their job, and then you ask them to vote for a certain candidate, and they look at you like what you're talking about is irrelevant to their life. You know, they are so beset with the problems of everyday living, just surviving, that it's a wonder that any of them vote. You have to have a certain amount of comfort in order to think about candidates.
People need to be educated, and the problem is if you're a candidate and if you take the time to educate people on complex issues, you're going to be left in the dust by the guy who has the cute one-liners.
Who said democracy is easy? You know, it's the hardest thing in the world is to get involved. You have to go to those dull, horrible, god-awful meetings. And you just have to persist. And maybe the person that sits there the longest is the one that gets things done. I mean, it's real easy to just sit home and complain, turn on a flick on the tube, and forget it. Well, and then you're going to scream about your tax bill. Well, it's your own damn fault, you know. you didn't get out and yell.
Pardon me, sir, would you sign this petition? And won't you attend the town meeting tonight? Do you take the tax and spend liberal position? Do you coddle the rich on the right? You canvass the neighborhoods, passing out flyers. You seek out the channels to power and wealth. When your candidate's elected, you feel so inspired. You're thinking of running yourself.
Well, do we really need to flood the U.S. post offices all this mail? I don't know. One hopes it makes a difference. And you carefully spend hours seeing if this is designed correctly, if it says what you want to say. And you know that 80% of it is going right in the wastebasket, unread, unthought about. But how else, you know? How do you change people's minds? I don't know.
After the election is over, I will disappear into the mountains of western Montana to hunt elk with my close friends and my brothers and this year my son. And if you want to leave a message for me at the Hungry Buzzard Saloon in Phillipsburg, Montana, I might pick up the message, but you know. So the next few days will be intense. But after it's over, then we just kind of close up shop for a couple of weeks and then come back and start over.
On election night, you huddle around the television and watch the early tallies coming in from the east. You get steamed off at reporters who predict the decision before the local vote is released. They tell you the opponent has just won the election. They tell you that your candidate's a losing bet. So instead of staying up to see the local projections, you shake your head and turn off your set. It amuses me how we determine this land's fate, and sometimes I wonder where democracy went. When some fool can be given the electorate's mandate, even if it's just by 1%.
We thank you for listening. The songs are by Greg Keeler of Troutball.com. Instrumentals in this hour are from Jeff Arnson of Racketship.com. I'm Barrett Golding of HearingVoices.com. Our theme music is by Joe Skyward.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. Our producers are Scott Carrier, Ann Hepperman, Larry Massett, and Kara Oler. Our intern is Max Darum. Mix engineer is Robin Wise of SoundImagery.com. Executive producer is Barrett Golding. From NPR, National Public Radio, this is HearingVoices.com.